I'm organizing these three reflections, as I mentioned both last night and the night before, around three fancy words, or words that we don't hear very often, in order to bring out from these three services in particular, these bridegroom services, some of the deep character and some of the important sources that we have in the church for our teaching about the end of time and about the coming judgment, and in particular about the kingdom. And the first word on the first night was the word eschaton, from the Greek word eschatos, meaning last. The eschaton is the end of things, the end of time, the end times, the end things. Eschatology is the study of, or the teachings about, the coming kingdom, the end of what we experience as earthly time, and how our eschatology is very different from other Christian traditions. The main source for our teachings is not the book of Revelation, although that is very important and figures into it, but the main source, the matrix, the womb out of which our teachings emerge, are these services during Holy Week, and more widely, Holy Week itself. But these services of the Bridegroom Matins are very rich with the theme of the coming judgment, of the coming kingdom. And one of the reasons that our understanding is different than other brothers and sisters in the church, other Christian brothers and sisters, is that we have an understanding that the end of time, the kingdom, is not necessarily something that will come at a time in the future. It will, but not just that. But that the end of time, that eschaton, has already started. And it's already started because we lost our last chance. This was the image and the example of the little boy who talks back to his mother and knows that the child knows that he's crossed a line and he's just waiting for the coming judgment from the parent. We are like that. God reveals himself to us, dwells with us, is incarnate of Mary, is manifested as the Son of God in Jesus Christ, and we killed God. It was our last chance as humankind to work with God to move to a place of holiness and renewal. God in his mercy, however, does not punish us, but in his mercy chooses to do the work by himself, so to speak. In other words, it's through the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ that the transfiguration of all things begins. So for us, the end of time began with the death of Christ. But it is not complete with the death of Christ. In fact, we are in a state of in-betweenness. And this was the second word, the word of last night, the word prolepsis, or prolepsis, P-R-O-L-E-P-S-I-S. We experience the kingdom as already, but not yet. It's the meaning of that word. Already, but not yet. In the Orthodox Church, that is how we understand the eschaton. It has been inaugurated. We have, with the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, the end of earthly time and the beginning of the time of the kingdom. But it will not come into its fullness until later. Between now and then, we live in that in-between time. We live proleptically. We experience the kingdom as already, but as not yet in its fullness. And so last night in the second of our Bridegroom Matins, we heard in the hymns of the sung by the choir in particular, that contrast between the wise and the foolish virgins, those whose lamps were filled with oil and were ready for the master when he came at night. We also heard of the wise and the foolish stewards, those who did well with what had been given to them and those who did not do well with what had been given to them. And there is this emphasis on being ready. We hear it even in the troparion, behold, the bridegroom comes at midnight. Are we ready or are we not? And so there's this great emphasis placed on doing the works of holiness, loving God with all that we have, loving our neighbor as ourself. So to live proleptically, to live and to experience the kingdom as already but not yet, requires us to honor that commandment to achieve holiness, to love God with all that we have, and to love our neighbor as ourselves. And so then the question arises, why are we here? Why do we do all this? Why are we in church so much during Holy Week? Why is it on a normal Sunday the services can be so long? Why is it that there is just so much stuff in these four walls? Why aren't we out there setting aside the ritual and doing the works of God? After all, isn't all of this just a symbol? Right? The third word, the last word, I'll give to you in a minute. To get there, we need to understand this word symbol, because in one of our family's favorite movies, there's a line that says, "I don't think the word means what you think it means," right? The word symbol does not mean what we think it means. We've lost the original meaning of the word symbol. And what we sort of settle with is a very thin and anemic and cheap version of the word symbol. A symbol is something that's fake. It's not the real thing, right? It's just a symbol of the real thing. So symbols are nice, but they're not essential. And whatever the symbol symbolizes, they can be detached from one another. And we can throw away the symbol and just concentrate on the real thing, right? It's a very common way of thinking in many of our churches that are outside of the Orthodox Church, who don't have icons in their churches, who don't believe in the power of liturgical worship, and who have what they would consider a freer form of worship. The symbols are not important. It's the thing symbolized. That referent of the term is important. That is not what the word symbol means. It's not the way that the church and most of human history has understood that particular word. The word symbol is a Greek word. It has two parts. Sim, or sin, means with. And volos means to throw. So sim volos means to throw something together. So a symbol is something that's been thrown together with what it symbolizes. An icon is thrown together with its prototype. Liturgy, a symbol, is thrown together with the worship in the heavenly realms. Symbols are not the same as the thing that they symbolize, but they cannot be detached from them. They go together. A symbol has been thrown up against that which it symbolizes, and they cannot be taken apart. The best example that I can come up with is if you have perhaps a grandparent or a parent or a loved one, a husband or a wife or a child or a friend, and there's some article of clothing that smells like them. And when you smell that article of clothing, you think of them, right? It's not them. They're not there physically. But you cannot detach the smell of that shirt or the smell of that perfume or cologne or the smell of whatever it might be. Maybe it's the cigarettes they smoke. It doesn't matter. The smell reminds you of them. That's a symbol. It's thrown together against the person that you're thinking of, and you cannot take them apart. And to take them apart would do violence to your memory of them, to your experience of them, and to the symbol itself. For us in the church, all of this is, yes, symbolic, but it's symbolic in that older, thicker sense. The ritual that we do, the services that we sing, the icons that we have, the incense, the vestments, all of these things are symbols. They are things thrown together against Christ and against the kingdom, and they participate in them. These are not detachable from the real things. They cannot be thrown away. That's not how we understand the word symbol. Therefore, and here's the third and final word, we are not simply remembering events long ago when we gather on evenings like this, when we gather during Holy Week each year. We're not simply remembering something that happened a long time ago. Our participation is not passive, but rather our participation is very, very active. And the word that describes all of this comes from the Lord himself when he says, "Do these things in remembrance of me." Do these things in memory of me. The word memory in English, again, cheap, cheap word. Memory sounds like, oh, think of me. Or next year, in 100 years, 1,000 years, 2,000 years, think of me when you do this. That's not the word in Greek. The word in Greek is not just to remember. It's ana Mimesis. Mimesis is to call to mind. Anna is to back, is something that's happened in the past, to call back something into memory. And the word that Christ uses when he says, do this in remembrance of me, is anamnesis, or anamnesis. A-N-A-M-N-E-S-I-S. It's a very important word in the understanding of our liturgical worship. What we do is anamnesis, anamnesis. It is active participation in the events symbolized in the ritual and in the icons. Those things cannot be taken apart. So that when we gather and we hear the hymns and we read the scriptures and we celebrate all of the services, the gap between where Christ is and where we are is closed. The participation becomes active, not passive. We're not gathering as a memorial just to remember something fondly or maybe not so fondly from long ago, but we are called back into it. We are thrown together with Christ. We become part of the symbol that is thrown against our Lord. We cannot be detached from him either. And so these services of the Bridegroom Matins, are symbols of the kingdom in that sense. These flavors and themes of the end of time, of the kingdom, of judgment, these symbols are stuck together with the inbreaking of the kingdom, with the inaugurated end of time. Right? That sense of in-betweenness. The image that we used was when you walk out on that first day, like yesterday, the temperatures are above 70 degrees for the first time, and you can smell the change. You can smell the movement and the turning from winter into spring. The daffodil becomes the image of prolepsis, of something already, but not yet. Already the winter has ended, but not yet has the summer come in its green glory. And so these services, they both speak of the kingdom. They are eschatological. These services are proleptic. In them, we experience the kingdom as already, but as not yet. And for certain, these are symbols of all of that, but symbols in that more glorious and significant meaning, the meaning of that word, that they are stuck together with the kingdom, allowing us to not just remember them, anamnesis, not just mimesis, but anamnesis, to participate in them, to participate actively, and not just to do a little choreography, a little chanting, a little singing, and some candle lighting, but to actually breathe the air of the kingdom itself. And so these services, thank God, they're given to us every year as part of the complex of Holy Week services, and we begin to move into those that are more significantly and directly attached to our Lord's Passion, starting even tomorrow night. It is called sometimes the service of Bridegroom Matins or the Bridegroom Matins of Holy Thursday, but it is connected to our Lord's Last Supper when he gives us these things and says, remember me when you do them. And so we will gather again tomorrow night at 6:30. The Bridegroom Matins of Holy Thursday is longer because we leave the Lenten structure and we enter back into a non-Lenten structure at the singing of Vouchsafe. We'll be in red. We will be anticipating the dawn of the day on which the Lord institutes his Eucharistic celebration. And that will be tomorrow night at 6:30. Christ is in our midst.